You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mallory Condon, hour number two. Welcome back. Des Moines Sports Station. 106.3 KXNO. Trent Condon, Ken Miller here until 1 o'clock. Got about 10 minutes or so before 1 o'clock. Trent's plays of the day coming up. Circus Sports sponsor those. Let's get to Matt Manasseri. He helps us out with the NFL draft. SportsInfoSolutions.com, the 33rd team as well. Matt, Trent, and Ken, thank you for coming on. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Ready to talk a little bit more of those Iowa prospects today.
Absolutely. Get some clones, get some Hawks in there. And before we do that, because I've been meaning to ask you this question all weekend long. Since Devondre Sweat's arrest for DWI in particular. This is a guy, Matt, that probably was a second-day pick, I would assume. That's where you guys would have had him there. Terrific, obviously big defensive lineman. And is going to play, I think, at the next level. So go inside the draft room, as you were with the Browns and with the Saints. How big of a knock this close to the draft is it on a prospect who's not a first round pick? He's not going to go on the opening night of the draft and get that, you know, that extra year. How big of a red flag? And do some teams just overlook that because he's the guy we want?
Yeah, it's different teams definitely handle it different ways, and different players, I think you got to handle different ways. So in this case, like you said, you're not looking at a lock first-round pick type. You're talking about somebody big, strong, one of the better defensive linemen in college football this past year, but also somebody who's probably not a three-down player on the NFL level. He's not really ideal as a pass rusher in true pass situations, a little bit more of a plugger type guy, a guy who's going to make tackles in the backfield. If you have a guy like that, part of the concern is when you are already dealing with, at his weight, I don't know if he can be an every down player. And then you add on top of that this sort of an issue. I mean, a DWI, you know, within a month of the draft, mm-hmm. it's really in the middle of the afternoon, too. So it's a real lack of judgment. And it's frustrating, honestly. I'm sure there are scouts that really want this player on their team because he can be a good NFL player. He can be a part of a winning team. But this is really difficult. And one thing that I'll throw out there that people probably don't think about as much is that in my experience, defensive linemen are crazy. Like, these are not your normal personality types on a team, right? You'll have all different personality types on a team. That's, you know, it's part of what makes football great. But in every building I've ever been in, I pretty much expect the D-line room to be the craziest room in the building. So it's a little bit the price of doing business when you're talking about some of the outlier type athletes that it requires to be, you know, a 280-pound, 315-pound athlete the way that these guys are. You end up with some characters, and that's not to excuse the behavior, but I do think that it's a legitimate part of the puzzle where if this was a quarterback, this would be a major, 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 I don't know how we can bring this guy onto our team. We can't trust in, to be our quarterback with this. With the defensive lineman, I think the line's a little bit different in terms of how you approach it.
Matt, I want to go a different direction with you. And we're going to talk about Cooper DeJean and his pro day that he had mm-hmm. yesterday and what he did. You know, you as a former scout, I know, I'm sure it's like any walk of life, right? There's certain scouts that look at certain things. Maybe it's what they do in the 40. Maybe it's what they do in the shuttle cone. And just on and on and on, what you're looking for. When you're putting together an organization and bringing in myriad of different scouts with different kind of backgrounds and different ideas, what do you believe is the best way for a front office to put that all together and to bring so many different ideas and what they're looking for and eventually come up with a consensus of who you want to take?
In my experience, the best, you said a great word there, first of all, consensus. I think that consensus is a real key. When I've been in draft rooms where we've made bad picks, it's been in situations where the scouts are arguing with the coaches, or the scouts aren't on the same page about the vision for the player, or really there is no coaching at the position group that we're bringing this player into, so we don't actually have a plan for him. When you've got a building that's all on the same page about their vision for a player, that player is just going to have a much better chance to succeed. So the consensus word that you mentioned is, I think a really, really big one in the process. The other thing is that word process. I think that having a process that you trust, like a little bit like we've talked about before, if you have your area scouts and you're relying on them to get, you know, the bulk of the information on the players, but then you have a cross-check system that allows you to rank all of the players at each position, then maybe you bring in some of the information coming from the analytics department where they have different understandings about what sorts of things are predictive, or they can help you adjust and calibrate each other's scales against one another. So all of these things, I think, can build towards a good process. And at the end of the day, if you're building towards a consensus, not groupthink, but a true consensus where the opinions are aligning and you have a shared vision, I think you're going to do a lot better than if you just have the scouting director or the GM sitting in a room by himself and saying, okay, I heard all the opinions and now I'm going to choose. That's when I think it goes wrong.
Is there a position that's easier to identify if this kid's going to make it? And conversely, is there a position that is kind of you can go any direction? It's you just never know if this player is going to hit or miss. Easiest position to scout, most difficult?
Yeah, we should say like least difficult to most difficult.
Okay,
I don't know if there's an easy, you're projecting, teenagers to become professionals. It's a difficult game, but in my experience, generally, I find that offensive line is sort of the easiest position to scout. And the reasoning there is you're dealing with players that are involved every play in one way or another. So if you watch two games worth of film on an offensive lineman, you probably saw most of what he's going to be asked to do and most of kind of the range of performance within those two games in a way that I think most scouts would agree one of the most difficult positions, and even though I played safety, I'm saying this, is safeties and defensive backs in general. But really, with safeties, you're talking about being involved in the actual play relatively small percentage of the time. So a lot of times you're scrolling through six games of film and barely seeing, a few plays that really involve what the safety is going to be asked to do on the next level. So for that reason, I think that just the kind of the amount that you see what you need to see on the film makes it so that O-line, I think, is a little bit easier and safety is a little bit harder. But I think different scouts have their different specialties is definitely true. And at the end of the day, it's a silly thing to say that any of this stuff is easy because it's anything but that.
Gotcha.
We've definitely found that out throughout the years that there is no one true way to get this all figured out. Well, one person that people believe maybe is a safety, maybe a cornerback, was Cooper DeJean. So coming off the injury that he sustained in practice a year ago, he comes out there, was not medically cleared until 2 weeks ago, and here he is putting up some pretty eye-opening performances. What did his pro day do for you? And overall, how do you see Cooper DeJean as a prospect?
It confirms that he's healthy, and it confirms everything that we thought about him. I think if you've been watching DeJean throughout his college career, you know that this is a very good athlete, a strong kid, a fast kid. So you don't worry about any of the sort of the measurables, the physical characteristics. So it's good to see all that sort of confirmation come in, and any kind of health concerns hopefully are alleviated at this point. For me, I think DeJean's in that group of the top corners in the class this year. I think they're all flawed in some way. I don't think there are any true number one corner type prospects in this draft, but I think he's one of these guys in that group of, four to six players that have one or two things that you don't like about them. In his case, I don't think he's an ideal press corner, and that's really one of the traits that you really care about on the NFL level is the ability to play press man-to-man. It's going to open up so much for you defensively if you have guys that can lock down and do that. Because I don't think he's special in that regard, I think of him as a little bit more of a number two or another number three corner. Now, what I like about him is the versatility. I do think he's somebody that shows the ability to play on the outside some. He could move inside some. Like you mentioned, he could play safety. I think it's not just like a racist thing that people are doing when they say, oh, he could play at safety. I think if you look at the skills that he displays on film, I think he could play safety, and I think he can also play slot or wide corner. So that type of versatility is something that, in my experience scouting, especially a lot of my lineage that sort of went back to the Patriots way, is very interested in versatility, especially on the back end. Mm-hmm. So I think that makes him really interesting, even if there are certain things where, in terms of the press coverage ability and the really, you know, like really being able to say, okay, we're just going to stick him one-on-one on Ja'Marr Chase and feel good about it. I don't think that's what you're getting with this player, but I think you're getting a whole lot of other really interesting characteristics.
Torrey Taylor's a punter, and he's a really good one. And he's going to be kicking on Sunday starting next year. As you know, punters and kickers, a lot of teams are just reluctant for whatever reason to use a draft pick on them. I think Torrey Taylor's going to hear his name called and is not going to have to wait to sign as a free agent. Will Taylor be drafted? If so, where should you start looking, Matt Manasseran? Fifth, sixth, somewhere in there?
Yeah, I think he could go even ahead of that, potentially. I mean, you're talking about one of the most electric punters in college football history. So I think his leg is legit. I think that the skill set is valued in the NFL. If you look around at some of the contracts going out to kickers and punters this offseason, you can see that it's something that teams are starting to quantify the value of and really understand. So I think he gets drafted for sure, and I could see as early as the fourth round, really.
All right, let's go to Eric Hall. Eric Hall. Oof. Leaves Michigan, off of back surgery, shows up in Iowa City, hits the ground running, and then sustains another devastating injury. He is a guy that is older. He is a guy that has...
middle of October?
Yeah, right? Something like that. Yeah. The Penn State game, right? And he hasn't been healthy. He is a physical specimen, but the injury concerns and the likelihood that he's probably not even going to be ready to play this year. I mean, would anybody even take a flyer on a guy like that, sixth, seventh round?
I could see a flyer on him sixth, seventh round. You know, I think that for the reasons you mentioned, he has a good frame. He has he's a nice athletic specimen. There's reason to think that there's upside there. But at the end of the day, we've never seen him demonstrate the ability to really block on a level that I think would play on the NFL level. So you're really leaning into those traits a little bit more. And as you mentioned, I probably see him as a little bit more of a developmental player where you might be looking a year down the road at potentially getting him into an H-back role type for your team. But between, the lack of demonstrated stuff on film, the injury concerns, I think it's a tougher projection right now. Could see him drafted, sure, but I think it's a late type flyer.
We'll get to Iowa State. We asked about TJ Tampa last week. Just one more on Iowa, unless Trent's got another guy. Logan Lee is going to be drafted, I think, defensive lineman. Your thoughts on Logan Lee from Iowa?
Yeah, another late pick, depth player. Yeah. You like the size that he has, I think, in terms of the frame and being able to hold up, really play as a five technique in the NFL level, lining up across from offensive tackles potentially, in those odd 3-4 type fronts at times. So I like that, but really I think you're talking about more of a hustle player here, somebody with limited athletic upside, can eat up some downs for you as part of your defensive line rotation, but I don't think a starter in my opinion.
A couple other guys that are potentials. We talked about TJ Tampa. One more for the Iowa State fans out there that want to just hear more about Tampa. The length is so intriguing. We saw him play it against a lot of high-level wide receivers in the Big 12. For people that missed it a week ago, your thoughts on Tampa?
Yeah, so Tampa, we talked about the thing with DeJean being the trait that is lacking in him is the press coverage ability. TJ Tampa, if you like him, it's because you want a press corner. So I think he's, for us, he's probably a day two type player. But I know he's been rising on some of the boards. Mm-hmm. Good size, good press ability, and has the athletic profile to really be a good player. What I worry about is the versatility, being able to play in zone, being able to play off man. To me, he's more of you kind of line him up against whoever he's going against, and you stick to that guy. And that's the skill set you're talking about here. So I like him. I think he's an outside-only corner. I don't like him playing in the slot. I think things will move around too quickly for him inside there, and we'd rather just lock him up on one of these outside guys. But overall, going back to that skill of being able to play press man coverage, if you have guys that can really do that, it really changes the way that you can line up on your defense, right? You could play 10-on-10 sometimes. And so that's what you would be betting on with him.
Is there another? I can't think of another Cyclone that's got a chance to be drafted. Some free agents, maybe.
Yeah, Easton Dean's not going to get drafted.
I don't think so.
Simmons, no. How about Jirel Brock?
Okay, I forgot about him.
So Jirel Brock wasn't around this
year.
The
whole year, yeah.
Because of the gambling investigation, we found out that there's a lot more layers to that story. How about the impact for a guy like him, or Noah Shannon in Iowa City, both of those guys that were caught up in it, found out in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't nearly the deal that we originally maybe thought it was going to. How is that going to be looked at in NFL draft circles? And for both of those guys, likely looking even just for a camp, a free agent tryout.
You know, if it's Shohei Ohtani, it's looked at a little bit different than Jirel Brock. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, we already know running backs are a devalued position, and so that figures into it. It's really one of these things where, like, how rare is the skill set that we're looking at here, and that's going to be proportional to what I'm willing to put up with. The sense that I get is from talking to people in the evaluation community, and, you know, owners can be different, and ultimately they're going to make their choices. People don't really care. If anything, it's a little bit like when a player fails a drug test. It's like, come on, are you dumb? Or like, what's going on here? More than it's, I think this guy has a problem or any sort of that. I don't think anybody believes that that's what's going on here. But you do certainly have the good old-fashioned knucklehead concerns.
Yeah, for sure. Last thing for me, and I know we talked about quarterbacks last week, but boy, J.J. McCarthy, he seems to be the quarterback, right? That teams are wanting to, whatever it takes, to move up to get him if you're not in the top three. So your thoughts on J.J. McCarthy, where do you guys see him, or how do you see him at Sports Info Solutions? The old running back for the Bears. Merrill Hodge came out and said, Drake May's the type of player that's going to get a general manager fired. Your thoughts on Drake May and what Merrill Hodge said about him, and then the love on J.J. McCarthy. Do you guys get it? Do you understand why it's out there? Seemingly everybody's interested in the Michigan QB?
Yeah, the great thing about being Merrill Hodge is if Drake May ends up being good, nobody's going to call for him to get fired or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I think he's not, you know, don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. He certainly doesn't. So keep throwing them. But I see it differently. I see Drake May as a high-level prospect. I see him not on the Caleb Williams level of truly special, but if drafting a quarterback that appears to have great arm talent, good size, good athleticism, 20 years old, if drafting that sort of a quarterback is what gets you fired, then God forbid, don't do that. But really, I think that he's a high upside type player. And sure, we never know with any of these guys, but I think he has a lot of traits that you'd want to bet on. With McCarthy, I think what's going on here is, I think as he's gone through the interview process, people have more and more found reasons to like him. But when you come back to the tape and when you come back to what he's actually put on the film, he shows some traits in terms of athleticism. I think he's got good arm strength, certainly. He certainly led his team very well and showed some good accuracy at his time in Michigan. But this was not the reason why the team was winning games. This was not somebody who put the offense on his back. If you're betting on McCarthy, you're really betting on a young person that you think has great stuff between the ears that you think can develop in that way. And for me, I really couldn't figure out how, if you watched film of Drake May and then you watched film of J.J. McCarthy, you would come away saying, you know, I'm more interested in developing this McCarthy character. Maybe you don't get fired because people have mixed opinions about him in a way that they don't about May. So maybe it's that 3D chess that's getting played right there. But to me, I think you're looking at one quarterback prospect who's good enough to be a top five and potentially top overall pick in any draft that you'd really see, outside of one where Caleb Williams is going to go above him. Mm-hmm. And then with J.J. McCarthy, I think you're talking about a quarterback that you can talk yourself into as a first round pick. But I think some of the stuff where we're starting to get into the top five with him, I think that's inappropriate based on what he's put on the film.
Get you out on this, and you mentioned some of the extras that are happening as we're 16 days away from the first round. How much do you read into the news that starts trickling out at this point? Mm-hmm. Is it Is it a bunch of smoke screens? Is there real things that we need to be really honing in on? Or is this the time where we're starting to overreact and most everybody is really getting locked in? Where are we as we kind of hear all the news that happens leading up into these final couple of weeks?
No, we're not starting to overreact. We're in full-fledged overreact.
We're there.
Yeah,
like that is April. We are April Fools. So everything you hear, I basically don't listen to any of the news. What I have done is I've started to make a habit in the last couple of years of actually tracking the betting lines. Here, you go back to those betting knuckleheads again. If you track the betting lines, I think you get a good sort of sense of what the market thinks of the situation. And there's some signal there. You can certainly get some, especially when you get to the real top of the draft. There's enough sort of leakage that you can start to understand some things when you sort of meld it all together. But in terms of individual takes, listen, any information that's coming out of an organization, that organization doesn't want that information coming out in most cases. So what's the ulterior motive? Why are people spreading that information? Or if they do want the information out there, it's because they're deliberately sending smoke screens. So I've never been super interested in that side of things. I check in to just see kind of what the consensus looks like from a high level. But I don't believe any rumors that you hear once you get to this time of year.
Matt Manasseh in Sports Info Solutions in the 33rd team. I just read your scout on Drake May. It's a really good read. You guys do good work, and I'm glad you've hooked up with the 33rd team. As I mentioned to you last week, I found that during the playoffs last year. I'd never heard of the site and been visiting it frequently since then. Matt, thank you for what you do. Maybe next week we'll take a look at the four regional teams, Vikings, Packers, Bears, and Chiefs, and talk about some of their needs as we make our way to the draft. Matt Manasseh, and Matt, thank you as always. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Graphite Construction Group sponsors our coverage of the NFL draft next week. We'll get into the regional teams. Manasseh does a nice job on these recaps, these long, lengthy reads on some of these some of the players, and he had the Drake May one.
Nice.
I'm fretting. As a fan, let me put my fan hat on. Okay,
this is.
I do not want JJ McCarthy to get his mail in Denver, Colorado.
Why?
I just watched him play. Like, he's a smart quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think that there's. I like. Believe it or not, I like Bo Nix better.
Yuck.
I love Penix. His injury problem bothers me. The age really doesn't. I mean, if you're going to get 10 years out of him, great.
Right. Exactly.
So yeah. 10 years will be 34.
Figure it out then.
Right. Exactly. I'll be dead.
You're not
going to
be.
Well, not, I mean, pushing the end. Anyways.
Pushing the end. You got another couple decades.
I hope you're right, dude. I really do. Truly do. But I'm just not a J.J. McCarthy fan. I wasn't a Justin Herbert fan. And I was dead wrong.
Yes.
Dead wrong. And neither was Frank Schwab. And we both commiserated over this.
Now, how many playoff wins does he have?
Well, zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
He's talented.
Yeah, he sure is. And we'll see. He's got a good coach now. I don't think it's going to be this year. But I don't know. Where are you on McCarthy?
Nah, I don't get it.
You don't really get the love for him?
At all.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither.
He's got a strong arm, okay?
Yeah, a lot of guys do.
I just can't get there.
Yeah, indeed. All right, it's 12:30. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Trent's plays of the day coming up about 10 minutes before 1. We will do that. Circus Sports sponsor those. Well, there's baseball, there's NBA. The play-in tournament, I think, is like a week from tomorrow where that bad boy starts. So, just because the college sports are over, the winter sports continue on, we'll switch to the pro game. Miller and Condon, 12:30, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. We take you into one Trent's play of the day coming up here. Get to that about 10 minutes or so before 1 o'clock. Baseball on the docket, I'm assuming, tonight. Have you looked at the Masters odds as of yet? By the way, tomorrow, Matt Rudy is going to join us from Golf Digest to preview the Masters at about 11:30 or so. Anybody catch your attention? Scheffler's like 4-1.
And I
can't bet him at 4-1, can you?
Well, I started doing a little work last night. after wrapped up and got on the bike for a little while as we're starting to work our way back into shape.
Atta boy.
I think that led to the coughing fit that I had last night, and I have another one here as I'm coming off an illness from last week. But so I'm just reading, got the iPad up there as I'm pedaling away, and I have this website that I use that has like these number projections. And basically what it spit out is even at that price, it has to be part of your card. And
really?
It sucks. It really,
yes.
The way that you and I like to, the way I bet golf, the way that you bet just in general at that price. But
you got to give me double digits before I'm even interested. It's the Masters.
Every single angle that I looked at it there, it has to be there somewhere. I mean, at minimum, even have him top five at even money.
Yeah.
And just have that. Say you're betting a combined $200.
Mm-hmm.
You probably need to have $25 of that, just not even money on that, just because he's so ridiculous.
So you bring up a good point. So say for a better out there that wants to bet $20 on the Masters, just to have a little, just have a little fun. And there's so many ways you can do it. You can bet your guy to win the Masters outright, or you can bet him top five or top 10. Can you bet top 20
top
in the 20? Masters?
You can do top 30.
So obviously,
make this cut.
Yeah, make the cut. Mm-hmm. So if you want to bet Rory, who's what? About, is he 10 to 1, 15 to 1? I think Circa had him at 15 to 1.
Yeah, that sounds about
so
right.
You're $20. How much of your 20 would you bet just to win the tournament before you bet some savers? Well, I really like him this week, but he's 15 to 1. If he doesn't win, he's in the top 5, and I'm going to make money here. Do you bet $10 to win and then $5 to finish in the top 5, the other 5 top 10?
Yeah, there's a lot of people, and that's called in golf betting laddering, where you put them together. Now, the way that I normally ladder, I don't do many top 5s. I do top 10s and top 20s is the way that I set it up. But, yeah, I'll put a half a unit on them to win and then probably a full unit on each of the others and kind of get there that way when I'm betting on an individual golfer.
So if your golfer has a good weekend, if he doesn't win,
you made money.
You're going to make your money back at the very least, right? You might make a little bit, but you're going to make, or you're not going to lose a ton.
Right. Scheffler right now is plus 475 at Circa.
I can't bet him at that price.
But I think you have to. I think you got to have even just $10, $20 on him just because his putting has improved. It's so much better in that 5 to 10 range. He missed one, I know, recently, a 5-footer that was important, but
it opened the door for that kid who never won a tournament before, which was good to see.
Rory's up to plus 1250 now at Circa. A lot of steam after that Sunday performance out of Rory in really windy conditions in San Antonio.
Is Koepka playing well?
Who knows?
Yeah.
I hate this. I really do. As somebody that loves the sport, loves the Masters, loves the majors.
You never see him play. You're not watching the CW. Forget that it's even on.
It's not there. I was big on Xander, as I always am.
Yep.
It's either him or Morikawa this week. It's Xander. He's down to under 15 to 1 now at Circa, plus 1450. I liked him a lot more when he was
20 to 1.
Yes, right in that range. The value guys, I'm not seeing a ton there. Ludvig Åberg.
Yeah, tell me about him, because there's a lot of folks that really like this guy.
I told you about him last summer.
Yeah.
I told you this was kind of the next young gun that was coming
up. You on our MediaCom show we tape on Wednesday, seemingly every week you have a bet on him.
And he's showing it. You're seeing that talent come through. In terms of raw talent, he's going to be a guy that we're going to know a lot about.
And he's a big price.
Yeah. 38 to 1.
Wow.
He's also a debutante. First timer.
Oh.
That does not go well at this course.
Oh.
Ludvig, stay away. Ludvig, not there. Willie Z. There's a guy that I know you...
I used to bet him all the time.
He used to be a big part of that one. I got my eye at least on him. I got a few more things that I'm going to run.
Isn't he coming off an injury or something last year?
Yes, and he is getting healthy. The guy that I bet blindly coming into the season that I am very disappointed myself about.
Oh, did you bet him to win any of the four majors?
JT, Justin Thomas. He fires bones last week.
Yeah, I saw that. What's behind that? Timing-wise, doesn't make a lot of sense.
Not at all.
Uh-huh.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. He started off January really well. It has not gone at that level since. I already have the ticket, but I'm not buying more. I'll tell you that much on Justin Thomas. I already have him, and it's already going to be part of it. Hovland, he's going through swing changes. We know about the guys. If you follow golf, there's always the different golfers. They're always tweaking, right? A lot of times, it's a problem. I think he is so talented, though, that it's not that there is some golfers that get in trouble tweaking all the time. I just think he's talented enough that he's probably going to be on my ticket coming up this weekend. I love the talent of him.
And Spieth?
I can't get there.
Boy, he's an adventure.
Yes, he is. And he's fun to root for, and he's just fun to watch.
Yep.
And then we get the local connection. Of course, we have to localize everything, and his caddy from Northwest Iowa, so we got that one, too. I don't think I'm going to have him there.
Would you bet Tiger to make the cut? Yes, no.
I would. I would. Remember how he limped around a year ago and how he was able to do it? You know, he has the cut record, or he's approaching a cut record. I think that's those are the little things that are still important to him.
There was a tweet yesterday or the day before that he was there playing a practice round, and he shot 31 on the front nine.
Ooh.
Now, I didn't mention the back nine.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Maybe pulled up after nine, because it's going to be a struggle for him to walk any tournament, especially this course.
What did you get Sungjae at last week?
115-1. What's he down to now?
He's 130-1 now.
Is he?
He's at circa 130-1.
Because he dropped to 98-1.
He did, yes.
So he's all the way back up to 130-1. Holy mackerel.
Long shots that I have my eye on that I'll have $5 on.
Mm-hmm.
Siwoo Kim, 88-1. Harish English, I really like his opportunity here at 135-1. And Denny McCarthy, after what he did last week, I know it's just on the back nine, and he is such an elite-level putter. He might be the best putter in the world.
Really? And I've never heard of him.
He's
what's his name? Denny McCarthy?
Denny McCarthy, yeah. He's a D.C. area kid, an elite putter. And he got it going. Had 8 birdies in the last 9 holes. And
well, he's got to be triple digits then.
He's 100-1. I don't know if I'll get there. I think I might have him, though, at like in a top 20, something like that. Kind of take the momentum of the back nine last week and go there. And that's kind of, I mean, then we get into some real deep shots, and of course I'll have those too. I mean, it's a major, so Emiliano Grillo will always be there.
You know, we never mentioned when talking about the upper echelon. John Rahm? I mean, do we know how he's playing?
He's
John Rahm.
Well, he's pissed off that he's not playing in a 72-hole event. Hey, John! Now, there's one person that made that decision, you idiot.
Look in the mirror, John. You'll figure out who that is.
That's what the money's for. Mm-hmm. You're playing in these rinky-dink events.
54-hole events that he was dead set against. And then they came with a Brinks truck.
When Liv was forming, and I remember one of the many conversations that we had at the time. And
must have been summer.
It was.
Because we wouldn't do this into the fall.
And one of us brought up the equation between what happened in IndyCar and how it, for all intents and purposes, wrecked the sport.
Yep.
I'm very concerned. I'm really
I don't think both can survive.
No, absolutely not. And it felt like, all right, a deal is going to come in place, and all right, PGA Tour is going to take this money from the Saudis, and it's dirty, but whatever. I don't care. Just get them all together. And where are we?
Yeah.
This is bad. Numbers are down.
Right.
TV numbers are down.
Well, there was a big meeting at Tiger's Resort in the Bahamas last week or a couple of weeks ago with some of the powers that be trying to figure this exact scenario that you're referring to out. It's not good. It's unsustainable.
I'm very concerned about the sport, a sport that I very much enjoy. This is not good. This has not been a great start to the PGA Tour season. The infighting that continues. Rory,
but this week
away.
It'll all go away because it's the Masters and it's the pristine golf course and it's the audio of the birds chirping, even though there might not be any birds on the course that day.
But what if we see TV numbers are down 10-15%? You know, what is the
can they give? Can they give her a special exemption?
Caitlin Clark was out there.
We saw her swing a club over at the Quad Cities.
Right, that's right.
She brings eyeballs to TV sets. Trent's Plays of the Day, they're next. Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO.
Back to Miller and Condon on KXNO and Trent's Pick of the Day, presented by Circus Sports Iowa.
All right, final couple of minutes of our Tuesday show. Murph and Andy coming up here at the top of the hour, The Drive with Heather and Sean. From 3 until 6, Drake new head coach, 4 o'clock. Ben McCollum today, 4 o'clock with Heather and Sean. Let's make some plays. Did you tally up your college basketball season?
I did, and another winning season in college basketball. As we mentioned, always my best betting sport.
Yep.
Year after year. It was not 142 units like it was a year ago.
Right.
But we were up 52.
That's pretty good. And this is all documented at the Action Network. This isn't Trent pulling numbers out of his you-know-what. You can actually see what he's betting and how he did.
You can watch it all the way through. It was a whole lot better until we got to certainly that Thursday, the first round of the tournament. I got walloped.
You weren't alone.
On that day. Friday, we bounced back. But overall, good season. We'll take that. Plus 52 units. It's pretty good.
Hell yeah.
Even at $10 a pop.
That's good.
An extra 500 and all those futures we talked about with UConn coming home. That was good for both of us.
Yeah, it was.
Last night. All right, I got three plays here. This is not normally the way that I play baseball, but I got two big favorites. I think they feel like free spaces. The Yankees, -188.
Oh, they got the fish, don't they?
Yeah. Oof. Nestor on the bump for them. And then the Dodgers against my Twins. The Twins can't hit.
No.
It's difficult to win baseball. This just did.
Yeah.
When you don't hit the ball, very tough to
and
win.
And you're going
to
be asked to hit the ball off Tyler Glasnow this evening.
And it's Louis Varland on the other
side. He's not bad.
He's all right. Also, I'm going to take one dog. Give me the Natties. The Nationals +150 at the Giants here this evening. So three baseball plays. We'll see if we add a little NBA, NHL to the docket at the end, but that's where we are here for today.
All right, you can see them all at the Action Network. That's going to do it for us. We are the 11 to 1 block, Miller and Condon. It's Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO.